I went ahead and secured your first class trip as quickly as possible. I ended up booking with Atmos. And then immediately I went to book my business class trip and computer says no. So of course, you know, so I'm like, okay, let me try to book it again. Nope, doesn't work. Okay, let me try calling up the Alaska MVP line. The agent in Boise is like, no, sorry, it's space not there. So I unfortunately was like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to book an economy seat. I know Trevor's like sitting here. Even now, I think if you look on his face and you see his expression, he's thinking, oh my God, what are you doing? What are you doing, man? You're flying across the Atlantic in economy. And I went to go book the economy. The economy ticket was gone. You know, I couldn't even book it through economy.
Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This week, we're doing something a little bit different. We've touched upon almost every episode how we book things, but today we're going to go a little bit deeper, Tom. We're going to talk a little bit more about what went into a recent trip. We'll probably put the trip report out after the fact, but we're going to talk through essentially what, 48 or 72 hours worth of planning an impromptu guys trip.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was kind of an impromptu thing, you know, nothing we had planned. So we didn't exercise any 12-month out strategies at the start of the schedule. And in fact, actually, that's something that we tend not to do, right? A lot of times, you know, at least for our travels, you know, it's pretty rare that we find stuff that's kind of at the start of the schedule, which I know is one pretty strong strategy for a lot of people.
Yeah, and that's definitely the weakest part for me, at least, you know, end of schedule. The close in, I think, used to be kind of like my sweet spot, but the rules keep changing. And so I feel like we're constantly learning. So before we dive in, I just wanted to sort of explain why we're kind of making a little bit of this pivot. And we've got a couple of guests lined up where we're going to kind of continue to tease this focus area out over the next couple few months. But coming off of the Minneapolis or the MSP gathering that Sam and Robert recently put on over at Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, which was absolutely phenomenal. It was, I think, 80 to 120 of the community, of the Myelinomics community. And my gosh, my head just exploded from all the great conversations that we had. But we had the opportunity to do a little bit of a presentation and to do a little bit of a survey. And that survey, one of the things we asked was, what do folks want to hear more content of? And it was the redemption strategies and really the redemption side, not necessarily the trip reports. I think folks appreciated those to a reasonable amount, but the overwhelming thing, Tom, and you correct me if you remember differently, was those redemption strategies.
Yeah, I think we did a little poll of the attendees and that definitely was kind of the overwhelming category that received responses. And I think it's fun. I think it's good for people to understand kind of the process that people go through when they're booking and they're doing their redemptions. There's a lot of different strategies, a lot of different ways you can slice the apple. You know, there's many ways that you can search for things, so many tools, so many different tricks that you can utilize. And we end up having to oftentimes, you know, every time we go to book something, it's a bit of a new experience because rarely do we see some of the, you know, kind of tried and true rules that might have been more prevalent in the past. You know, a lot of those seem to be out the door at this point, right? Where every single time you look at things, it seems to be kind of a one-off.
It's so true. I can count on probably two hands how many times in the before times, the before the pandemic, that at 14 days out, whether it was 8 o'clock at home, 9 o'clock out in Dallas, that I'm picking up a Lufthansa first class seat or three. And we had these things that we just knew to be true, right? I mean, we're not going to say inalienable, but they were so consistent that you could almost set your clock on it. United availability in within 2 weeks, for example. And even that just seems like it doesn't want to be there. So with that in mind, I want to pivot and sort of talk through this trip. My wife gave me a little bit of a window of a few days to travel. You happened to be free at that time. And so we essentially had what, Sunday through Thursday, had to be home end of day Thursday.
Well, you make it sound like that this was a very, very well organized and routine thing. And I would say There were definitely a couple of days in advance of us even getting close to booking something where we were both looking at availability. We were looking at, you know, what was out there. And of course, the two of our minds went in completely different directions, right? Because, you know, obviously Trevor's like Mr. Europe over here. I was trying to figure out, oh, how do we get to Asia? You know, and so we're both trying to solve this problem from completely different methodologies. And the hardest part was just deciding, where are we going? Because that ended up being one of the most difficult things to figure out. Like, where are we even going on this trip, right? Because it was kind of the world is our oyster, and we were going to utilize, you know, what was out there from a availability perspective.
That's so true. And so from that perspective, I think we both opened up Seats.Aero and pretty much just said, we want to go either Asia. And Seats.Aero has a beautiful functionality where you can put like all Asia, Southeast Asia, you can put Japan. There's a number of other countries and regions that they've got. And so I threw the whole kitchen sink at it. And Seats.Aero, unfortunately, didn't come back with a ton that showed us that we could do Asia. I think what I recall is you had found and pieced together a couple of things. I think at one point, it might have been like 1 a.m., like the Thursday before, that you texted me and you're like, hey, I think I found Japan. And I had already fallen asleep, and I think I texted you the Friday morning, and I'm like, if it's Japan, let's go.
By the time you responded, it was gone, if I'm remembering correctly. And even then, some of the other things we were looking at were, let's go to Europe and position there, because that's how we can get to Asia very easily, or maybe even position somewhere like the Middle East or somewhere. Because once you're outside of North America, it's seemingly a lot easier to find something to where you want to go.
Yeah. And so we were in a situation where we were starting to look at being in a three award situation for 5 days. And I think that's where I started to get a little bit of pause. You had found a lot of cool strategies. I don't know how many of those strategies you want to put out since this isn't behind the paywall, but you had found a couple of connection points in Europe that seemed really like it would be a fun experience. But what we ended up sort of getting into, I think, with some of those itineraries was we were now flying, spending more time either in the air or at least airside with connections than we were going to actually spend on the ground at a destination.
I think if I remember also, I almost got you into a economy flight over the Atlantic. I think that was the other kind of exciting thing where you were almost broken down, right?
So we're a little scattershot here, but I think that really just kind of conveys how open the aperture of this trip was for us, right? I think on the one extreme, we were talking about going to Europe, going to either the Middle East or Asia, turning around maybe after a night and then flying home again via Europe in a 3 or so award construct with a lot of time in the air. And then the other side was, well, we could take a short hop in economy on the way out and then business on the way back and just do something simple like go to Spain, maybe fly into Madrid and then go up to like San Sebastian or Bilbao, right? Is that a good way of characterizing sort of the two extremes of how wide that aperture was?
Yeah, and because the aperture was so wide, I think you get into a bit of analysis paralysis because there's so many different options and so many different rabbit holes to kind of chase down. I will say one of the things that I would just want to point out here is, again, I was using a lot of Seats.Aero. I think I may have mentioned it before, but one of the biggest strategies that I would do is definitely use those multi-city codes, I would say, when you're doing your searches. That's probably one of the things that I just remember or recollect from doing this a few weeks ago, where I was just putting in, you know, hey, let me look at all the East Coast airports, EST. Let me look at, you know, all the Asia airports, ASA. Let me look at, you know, all the European airports, EUR. You know, these are all multi-city codes that you can use that are specific to Seats.Aero. And so you can kind of refine this to just say, hey, let me set up my filters. Let me set up my multi-city codes and just see what comes and pops back in. So a lot of time, you know, I think when we do these kind of chases for availability, we're trying to identify those overwater segments, like, you know, like where, how do we get over the Atlantic? How do we get over the Pacific? You know, how do we do those type of things? And so a lot of times it's just, let's pop in a lot of broad searches over the time period we're looking at and try to see what seems interesting, what seems reasonable, what are routes that get us over the ocean that we are interested in taking. And then that second hop or connection, you know, once we're in the continent across the ocean, a lot of times that's what we figure out. And I think that's kind of what happened on this one too, right?
Yeah. The way I like to think of how we did this and how I generally do all award searching is I think of a funnel. And you think of the largest way to search is just as you said with the Seats.Aero, right? any way I can get over the water, whether it's, you know, to Geneva, Frankfurt, Zurich, De Gaulle, Amsterdam, et cetera, right? And so I cast the greatest net as we did. And then we sort of just crafted a little bit lower, 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 lower. And so what I find that I do is I look at what that broad view is. And this is what we ended up doing, although I don't think it proved to be terribly useful, a little precursor to the plot twist that we'll get to in a little bit. But after we do that seats.arrow, I turn to points.yeah. And now I've narrowed it a little bit. And now I'm looking at two city pairs. But oftentimes what you can do is you can sort of look at those city pairs. And if you choose judiciously, you're not looking necessarily to Frankfurt, but you might choose to Venice or to Milan. And that might show that, oh, there's Zurich over water available, there's Frankfurt or Schiphol over water availability. And then that helps you kind of continue that bit of a funnel, so to speak. And then you can start getting into whether you go to United or Aeroplan or to Air France, et cetera, to be able to find what that ideal redemption is.
I feel like it took like 1 or 2 days of doing that before suddenly, you know, I think we were chatting, you know, online, or I think we hit either a FaceTime call or something. And I think we ultimately gave up at some point and then moved to texting. I think one of us either had to go somewhere or do something. And somehow, relatively, you know, at the same time, I think we both happened to look at maybe the Lufthansa First Class Finder and seats.arrow, and we're like, oh, almost at the same time, we both were like, hey, O'Hare to Frankfurt. You know, that's what we found, right?
And there's the plot twist. Yeah. We started really looking in earnest, I think, Thursday night. We did a FaceTime on Friday, and then we did another FaceTime on Saturday. And I want to say it was like 3 o'clock or 3:30. We finished
Sounds
our FaceTime.
Right.
And I had sort of resigned myself to, now I'm looking at moonshots, because we couldn't find something that we both felt the balance or the trade-offs worked, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I had gotten pretty close on the idea of economy to Madrid, but then I was sort of like, well, we go to Madrid a lot.
Yes.
Like, don't get me wrong. I love Madrid. I love Spain. But I think you weren't very excited about it. I wasn't very excited about it.
I was like, Spain again. And by the way, you know, I have another trip to Spain in literally 3 days. So I already knew I had another trip flying over to Spain in the next, you know, within a short period of time. So another reason why I was like, you know, everything we were looking at, I was like, yeah, that's not really that sexy, or that's not that interesting, you know. And so I, for whatever reason, it was hard to get either of us excited about what the other person had come up with, I think was what we were running until the breakthrough.
Yeah. Until we turned to that seats.arrow alert. And it just happened to be, I think I saw Denver and I saw Chicago, and we saw it just about the same time, texted, and now the thrill was on. This is hands on the keyboard. We're actually at computers, and now we're trading texts and typing searches at the same time. And what strategy were we going for, Tom?
I think we were looking at pretty much all of these Eastern European countries that can connect from Frankfurt with a reasonable amount of time, allowing us to spend some time at either the first class terminal or the lounge in Frankfurt. But looking at countries and places that you and I both have not been to, right? So we were looking at all kinds of different cities, right? I think we were looking at, I'm thinking, what, Belgrade, we were looking at Krakow, we're looking at Warsaw. You continue the list. I feel like there was a lot more there.
Yeah, we were looking at Sofia, Bulgaria, Bucharest, Romania, even Tirana, I think Albania. And the strategy, you said reasonable. I think a lot of our listeners are probably not going to agree with the quote-unquote reasonable part of that. So our goal was the longest possible amount of time that we could spend at the Lufthansa First Class Terminal on a connecting flight. My prior record was landing at like 8 a.m. in the morning, 7, 8 a.m. in the morning from Chicago, and then flying out to Tallinn, Estonia at 5 p.m. Well, we broke that record, and boy, did we break it. And I never would have guessed. You came up with something. I mean, let's take it back a second. Our goal was Eastern European, was new country, and then we overlaid Hyatt hotels.
I would say that was one of the strategies after about an hour, because, you know, we were doing about an hour looking at all these, turning over all the rocks. And I was like, let me go back to the source, because I was realizing that what was driving some of our decision making was, where are we going to stay? in this place. So I started opening up the, the Let's Explore the Hotels of Hyatt, map that you have on the website. And that's when I kind of happened upon the Mediterranean and I saw, oh, Malta, that's the place I know that I don't think Trevor's been to. I haven't been there. And I looked at the flight times and I was like, oh, there's like several options. And then I even looked at like, I was starting to even think about how would one get back from Malta? And I realized, oh, wow, Malta is one of these places that has a trillion flights back to London. And that made it a lot easier, I think, when we started thinking about how do we even get back from this place?
Yeah. So it felt like when you narrowed in on Malta and the 13-hour layover, I think for me, that sealed the deal so much so that I started booking it. Like you said, Malta, 13-hour layover in a first-class terminal. I said, done. And this is where we got a little bit bad. I will admit, I think this is probably not the most ideal way to redeem that we did it. What we ended up doing, I ended up just booking us on Aeroplan at 100,000 points. I felt like it was a good value. I've booked Lufthansa first class at 130. I didn't even bother looking at Life Miles, which reminds me, I need to check to see when my Life Miles will expire.
I think I checked on Life Miles when you were talking, and I couldn't find it. So I think Aeroplan was probably the right answer.
Yeah, I definitely felt like we had it within our grasp, and we grabbed the brass ring with the tool that we could validate it on, and I just hit book, and everything worked out beautifully.
Book first, ask questions later, I guess, is another redemption strategy that I think turned out to be very important, because you know what? We had problems with that a little later. We're going to talk about here in a minute.
So true. So true. So I guess the thing I would say is don't let yourself get into an analysis paralysis of saying, okay, well, I find the space on Aeroplan. Let me stop and look at Life Miles because I could save 10 or 20,000. I don't even know if that's the case anymore because I know that Life Miles did a big devaluation. That's becoming a blind spot for me because the last time I booked Lufthansa first class through Life Miles, it required 2 phone calls from the Lufthansa Senator's Lounge, and I don't want to go through that again. So I realize we're not always the most efficient in how we do our booking. Sometimes we give a little bit of that efficiency for knowing that it's either solid, that we don't have to worry, or just knowing that we're not going to have friction during the trip.
Well, the other part of it is nothing is worse than finding space and then having it disappear on you. I mean, that is one of the worst feelings, where you think you have the answer, you've got it, and then it just kind of, falls through your fingers, right? And you almost had it booked, and you look a minute later and like, don't, the space is gone.
You say that like you've just recently experienced that, Tom.
In multiple ways. Because, literally as, you secured, the flights on Aeroplan, then I kind of started looking toward, where are we staying? How do we get back? And I think we found a pretty good option. And I think that's also part of why this trip worked. Because I think, one of the things that we're both about is maximizing the journey as much as the destination. So I think one of the things that we'd always wanted to do, or I've done in the past, and I would love to have done with Trevor, was to do a bit of a lounge crawl at London Terminal 3. And that is part of what we planned on with this particular trip.
Yeah, and I was really excited to do it. I always felt like it was forcing it to try to make it happen. And this was a trip that I felt like it was still forcing it, but it was the right time to force it.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't require that much forcing. I mean, it was a little bit out of the way maybe in some places, but I felt like the effort that we needed to exert in order to do the lounge crawl was I think, worth it. And I really enjoyed our morning and early afternoon at London Heathrow.
Well, I think the other thing that we did was we maximized that.
Of course, we did.
Maybe we're not the best maximizers, but we maximized it in regard. So we ended up getting to Heathrow and we got, 5 lounges at T3. And you were able to find a first class seat, a flagship first on American, which meant that we could go to the Chelsea as well.
Yep, and so, in JFK. Yep. So not only did we have some superior premium lounge experiences in Heathrow, but on the other side of the Atlantic, we knew that we'd have a couple hours at American Airlines' finest lounge game in JFK.
So that way home was like a 7 lounge trip.
It was.
So let's walk through some of the heartbreak in booking the way home.
Yeah. So, I went ahead and secured your first class trip as quickly as possible. I ended up booking with Atmos, so relatively quickly. And I picked this flight because, number one, the timing was really good. It would allow us pretty much the morning and early afternoon in Heathrow, and then it arrived in JFK. I'm trying to remember, was it like maybe like 4 or 5 o'clock, something like that in the afternoon? And then gave us a good solid, you know, 4 hours or so in the Chelsea Lounge and before we would connect down to DCA from JFK and American. So this was a really perfect itinerary, I think, for what we were trying to do, which was that T3 lounge crawl and, you know, some quality time at JFK. And of course, I booked yours first. And then immediately I went to book my business class trip and computer says no. So... Of course, you know, so I'm like, okay, let me try to book it again. Nope, doesn't work. Okay, let me try calling up the Alaska MVP line. Hey, I saw this space. It's still showing in your search engine, but it's not letting me book. What's going on? Dun, dun, dun. The agent in Boise is like, no, sorry, it's space not there. So I unfortunately was like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to book an economy seat. And I know Trevor's like sitting here, you know, he's even now, I think if you look on his face and you see his expression, he's thinking, oh my God, what are you doing? What are you doing, man? You're flying across the Atlantic in economy. And honestly, when I thought about this, I was not happy. Again, I was, you know, that space had just kind of fallen through my fingers. It was literally right there, and within minutes, everything was gone. And you know, I went to go book the economy. The economy ticket was gone. You know, I couldn't even book it through economy. Every single option I wanted on that flight was not working. I in fact had to go and book this on American Airlines with AA miles instead of Alaska miles because, for some reason, suddenly from having like 4 different classes available on this flight, it went from everything's available to nothing's available on it with Alaska miles within like minutes. And I got to tell you, that is a very frustrating thing to have happen to you when you think you had exactly what you want. It was going to work out perfectly. And you had some expectations and then it all kind of crumbles in your hands.
Well, and you had seen a business class ticket or a business class seat. So the original...
A business class seat, an economy seat. I forget if there was a premium economy as well, but you know, there was all different classes of service available on this flight.
Right. So the original idea was that I was going to fly in first, that would get us into the Chelsea. And I think there might've been other lounges that we might've needed that, or maybe not. I can't remember. And then you were going to fly business class and we were both going to arrive comfortably. And then it turns into that tale of two cabins.
Yes.
I mean, it might've been two different airplanes for all intents and purposes. You were so far behind.
Yep, yep. Well, you know, and I ended up getting an economy seat, but again, I had to go to a completely different currency. Like, you know, it went from having everything available on Alaska Airlines mileage to nope, computer says no, and I had to go to, you know, transfer some miles into my American account and make that work instead. And of course, the downside is I don't have any elite status with American. I have my elite status is right, at least currently is on Alaska. So that ended up being a little bit of something that, you know, kind of reared its head a little later. And we might talk about that during the trip report. But again, you know, this is a situation where everything was planned out. I had the perfect answer. And it really required a lot of hoops to even get close to what we were trying to do originally. But I did get on your same flight, you know, with the same itinerary. Just it took like 3 different attempts.
Well, but I think it's informative, right? I think it's informative for at least 3 reasons, right? Number one is you encounter a challenge. What do? You just block and tackle. Okay. Atmos won't work. Let me call. Because sometimes calling is that secret weapon. Yes. I've been amazed at what Alice in Boise can do when it comes to an Atmos award. I've been very impressed with the Alaska team. And that goes back, my gosh, 10 plus years. That Alaska team is just awesome with what they can find.
Sometimes they can make miracles happen, especially for lead members.
And they also have the ability to talk to, I think they have the airline partner liaisons that sometimes can even open up space. So this goes back to one of my core principles is you don't know if you don't ask.
Correct.
That's what I would say is probably point two. And then point three is looking at different currencies. I mean, we talked earlier about Lufthansa with Life Miles, United, and Aeroplan. But with American Metal, I find that more often than not, and not just American Metal, ironically enough, with the Advantage program itself, you will find more space available with Advantage miles than you will with Alaska miles. And it frustrates me like nobody's business because it's so much easier to get Alaska miles, or at least it was, with the American Express transfer to Hawaiian, etc. But I find more often than not that American miles are like that silver bullet and almost more valuable because of it. We flew to Japan in June. And we had to use American miles, couldn't use use the Atmos. I've got 5 seats out of 8. I'm still trying to get 3 more. flying to Australia on American metal. It's just, for one reason or another, algorithm says American gets more, even whether it's JavaSpace and others. And so being able to look at those multiple different currencies, I think gives you a lot more flexibility. And I think you said that you transferred the ability to transfer thank you points to American. My gosh, that is awesome.
It's a huge difference maker. It's something that, as you guys kind of evolve your strategies on the earn side, definitely have thank you points in your portfolio, I would say, because that capability to transfer them into American Airlines is hugely helpful. And you're right. On several times this year alone, you and I have experienced where American Airlines' superior availability have kind of come in and been the answer for a couple of different trips we've done. Where, you know, again, for whatever reason, Alaska Airlines or you know, Avios or some of the other currencies just aren't available. And the only possibility is to use American miles. So they come in clutch. I can think of multiple times where having a stash of American miles has become in very, very helpful to the point where, unfortunately, I'm starting to run out of them because, you know, they've been kind of the universal answer key or wild card or trump card or whatever a number of times. And I'm going to have to start stacking up some more thank you points, I think, to keep my balance healthy.
Oh, yeah. I just threw in an application for the new American Advantage Globe card. I might throw in a second application for another player just because the American miles have been the difference maker. It's funny. I think of the Alaska Atmos, or I don't know if we call them Alaska miles or however we want to refer to Alaska miles. I feel like they're the everyday game changer mile because of the distance base. I feel like if I need to hop over to Vegas, if I need to hop down to Florida, hop up to New York, that's the first place I'm going. I mean, they are the modern day Avios back when Avios was just absolutely incredible.
And some of that's, you know, the regionality, right? You know, just us being in the DC area and having, you know, Reagan National being a hub for American with a lot of nonstops that happen to also have availability that is available to the Atmos program. I think that's part of why it's such a difference maker.
It is, but I will commonly look at it and I'll see, let's say 4.5 thousand for Atmos, 7.5 thousand for Advantage. And then don't forget Etihad. Etihad gets access to some of American space. And there are times that Etihad might be in the 7,500 or the 8,000 or 12,000 range, depending upon the cabin. That's another sleeper, I think. I've found a lot of space with Etihad that I didn't otherwise expect to see. But when it comes to international flying, I feel like American Advantage miles are really the king. I mean, I love Aeroplan. I think Aeroplan is a very versatile program. Love the Alaska program. But I have the hardest time finding with Alaska miles a lot of redemptions, other than maybe like a Condor type redemption, which I think is a really cool one that I definitely encourage our listeners to look at.
Well, I think with, you know, Alaska miles, I feel like they definitely black out certain dates. Like I think Fridays, Sundays, you know, some of the more peak days, it seems like the award availability is definitely curtailed. Another quick point, you know, you brought up Etihad miles, and actually this is something that has affected me, is I just realized that just be also aware that those miles expire pretty quickly.
18 months?
Yeah, I think 18 months or so, and they don't get renewed when you just transfer some more over. So, you know, make sure if you're transferring miles over to Etihad that you've got an immediate use for them because they're going to not be ones where you can just like sit on them for an extended period of time. But, you know, going back to our kind of our story with our interesting, you know, redemption, you know, the American Airlines and Atmos saga was not the only thing that I ran into when I went. Because, you know, of course, after trying to figuring out the flights, you know, I went to go book the Hyatt that is there in Malta, the Hyatt Regency. And of course, not all the nights were available.
That was an interesting one. I didn't expect that to be a sticking point, although it ended up being, I think, a good turnout, which we'll talk about on the trip report. But it's the weirdest thing I find. And it wasn't just that, right? It was also when we were trying to book the hotel in London.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much we ran into lack of availability for points in the Hyatt program for multiple properties to the point where I ended up booking the Hyatt Centric, which fortunately is just across the street from the Hyatt Regency. I booked one night at the Hyatt Centric in Malta and then one night at the Hyatt Regency the following night. So I was able to more or less be in the vicinity of Trevor for our trip to Malta. But then, yeah, when we went to look at, you know, where were we going to lay over, because we did have an overnight layover in London, we were looking at the Hyatt Place by London Heathrow. And of course, that hotel was not available with points.
Yeah. And so we tried something, and this is a harebrained thing for me, because to put the time here, this is after Columbus Day, and we're trying to figure out different things. It's also at that time that Rove Miles came out with this big deal. Hey, you can earn miles. Your status will be acknowledged, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, if you book through us. And this Rove Miles thing is still new to me. It's a shopping portal, it's transferable points, and now it's a travel booking portal. And so I convinced you, I think, Tom, to book through there, and I did the same. And little did we know that there's a huge honking asterisk at, like, you know, 0.3 font that says you've got to book what is normally a much more expensive rate to be able to get your status night and your status acknowledged, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we ended up both booking through Rove Miles thinking that we were going to get 10x or 20x miles, the elite qualifying night, et cetera. And I think a couple of days later, we got a less than happy surprise, right?
Yep, no elite qualifying stay for this. I mean, it was recognized, it's in the record book, but whatever rate it was not elite qualifying.
Yeah, and I ended up reaching out to the Rove after the fact, and they did highlight that there is a qualifying rate and a non-qualifying rate. I went back and I looked, and it did not jump out to me. I recognized there's a breakfast rate and a non-breakfast rate, and I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm a globalist, I get breakfast anyway. And so I think we lost out on an elite qualifying night in that attempt of trying to leverage kind of one of the new fintechs, and I left a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. They did do a little bit of a gesture of goodwill when I put in a ticket, but will I go back through them again to book? I mean, maybe, but probably not the first thing I'm going to think about. How about you?
Yeah, I reached out to them via email about not receiving any elite recognition and the elite qualifying nights that I was looking for. Haven't gotten a response back. So I don't know. I think it felt like the first response was very quick. And then I did a follow-up, and then I've just been waiting. And I don't know, maybe I have to ping them again. But no resolution for me yet on that one. And definitely a little bit of a cautionary tale for Rove. I mean, I'm not going to write them off, essentially, but I would say if you're looking for a hotel stay to credit to them and also get your elite qualifying nights for whatever program you're in, big, big caveat. Definitely watch out for that.
Yeah, that said, I will say if you're looking for miles and there's no meaningful, you know, spend 250 or 500, get 5,000 type miles through the conventional shopping portals, Rove sometimes has higher multiples than what I see Rakuten have, which is my sort of go-by. It's either the traditional Advantage Shopping, et cetera, or Rakuten. I am seeing that Rove is having, in some cases, a higher multiple. Sometimes it's like a 4.4 or something like that type multiplier that I think makes it interesting from a shopping standpoint. The other thing that I've been trying to better understand is if you refer people, I think it works similar to some other programs where you get some fraction of a point when those people that you refer go through the Rove's portal as well. But I am not an expert here. I'm just going based on a little bit of what they sort of said in the sign up. And so, blah.
Okay.
It's a day. No. I was trying to do real-time reading to validate that you can actually earn at the same time, like from somebody, like you earn if somebody that you referred earns, and I can't find it super quick. So
I thought you just got a 500-point bonus or something.
Well, you get the referral, but I thought there was something, and I'm looking, and I cannot find it very quickly. So we might just have to strike that out of the episode or leave it in, and I'm happy to look like the fool. But they have a lot of partners, which is kind of cool. Seeing Vietnam Airlines again popping up, same thing with Thai. You've got Aeromexico, Air France, Air India. Everybody wants to fly on Air India, I'm sure. But they might have actually some interesting star awards that maybe we've just been missing, right? I mean, it's right. A program I haven't dove into at all. Cathay Pacific is another transfer partner. We all love Asia Miles, especially for the added or extra availability for Cathay space. And then you've got your path into Avios, as everyone does, this way with Finnair and Qatar. And Hainan Airlines, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time. Do you remember those old fares? What was it, like less than $2,000?
I don't think they're even old. I think they still have some interesting business class fares from now and again, but unfortunately, it will involve a connection in China usually, which you know, even with Hainan being one of the nicer airlines probably to connect on, I know the Chinese international transfer process is not exactly the most smooth and or elegant.
That's true. Oh, so they still have good fares now, huh? They used to have, what, like $1,200 or $1,500 business class fares?
I've seen less from originating in the U.S., but they definitely have had some. I know, you know, so I think one of the sites that I look at occasionally that I think we've talked about in the past is Premium Cabin Deals, I think is. I'm actually going to have to
Premium Fare quick, Deals.
Premium Fare Deals. I thank you for help correcting me. They put out some business class deals from now and again, and you occasionally see Hainan show up. And quite frankly, you know, those deals tend to be all these little lesser known international carriers, like whether it be Philippine Air or Gulf Air or Oman or Egypt Air or
Saudia.
A lot of Saudia. You know, that seems to be their bread and butter. They're usually picking up some of these very interesting business class fares on some of these lesser known carriers because they're the ones that are still putting out some of these very aggressively priced business class cabin fares, you know, usually from very disparate places on the globe, whether it be London to Johannesburg on Kenya Airways, and maybe it is Boston to Cebu on Hainan or something like that. Those are the type of things you'll see.
Yeah, you see a Dulles to, I think, Manila on Saudia every so often, too.
Exactly.
We're going to have to do one of those fares. We're just going to have to like find one of those good fares out of Premium Fare Deals and just make a trip out of it just to prove that they're usable.
Wouldn't be the first time, right? You know, I mean, you know, we didn't do it this year that I can recall, but I know that that's definitely something we did last year and we've done many times in the past is find an interesting fare and fly it. You know, that's definitely one redemption strategy.
Yeah. Oh, I sent you one. That was interesting. Actually, like a couple of days ago, there was a good Qatar Airways New York or Philly to Tashkent, Uzbekistan. I didn't get any warm fuzzies from you, though.
Yeah, I think 2025 is mostly in the books as far as travel that I've gone ahead and secured. Although I do need to find my way back from Chicago seminars. We still haven't figured that out.
Well, this is going to probably publish after Chicago seminars, so we'll figure that out. Know by then.
The mystery will be solved eventually. But again, you know, I think I was just going to say that, you know, I think on this trip, I think Seats.Aero was, for me at least, was definitely one of the more important tools. And, you know, despite what we were talking about originally, we did end up with three different award tickets, right? We ended up booking DC, or actually it was more than three. I think it actually ended up being four because we had to position up to O'Hare. Then we booked an O'Hare to Malta. And then we booked a Malta to Gatwick, which was, you know, that was kind of fun flying into Gatwick for the first time.
My second time. First time in a while, yeah.
Yeah, I had been there before, but it's the first time in this decade. And then, of course, the final flight, which was London Heathrow to DCA. That was the final ticket.
So via New York.
Via New York. So we ended up actually booking four different tickets, if I remember.
Yeah, but I feel like those short flights don't really count as much. The reason that I had a problem with the three tickets was more the we're going to pay to get over the Atlantic, then we're going to pay to get to Asia, and then we're going to pay to get Asia via Europe home. And so, I mean, I felt like from a number perspective, it felt like that was a quarter million mile trip for 5 days, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've spent a lot of miles on shorter trips, but I just felt like I've been kind of cutting back a little bit on kind of the excessive burning. And I just felt like that was a little bit on the excessive side for this trip. But don't get me wrong, I would have loved to have gotten to Asia, but I was happy to make it to Malta. And we'll talk more about that in a future show.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that came up, you know, with one of those flights is, you know, we did have to book that, you know, Malta to London flight, and there were a couple of options there. I was originally thinking about just paying cash because, you know, the economy fares actually were pretty reasonable. They were like, you know, 130, 140 bucks, something like that for, you know, either economy or basic economy. I can't remember at the time. But one of the things you were pointing out was, well, you know, it is a fairly long flight. It was about 3 hours, you know, as far as, you know, European continental flights go. And you were like, you know, just book us in business. I'm like, eh. I guess, and that ended up being, I think, the right answer because I thought we had a pretty nice flight, I think, from Malta to Gatwick, and it wasn't my initial thought, but booking 15,000 Atmos miles for that 3-hour flight, you know, which ended up having a pretty good experience overall, we'll talk about later, but that, I think, was the right answer.
It was a 3-hour and 50-minute blocked flight. That's almost 4 hours in my book. You want the extra comfort. You want the extra care. I mean, I know we're talking about Euro business, but we had the middle seat was blocked off. We had a proper meal. We had some drinks. We had, I thought, a very good experience for what it was. And I would have spent that 15,000 every single time.
Well, you know, you think you make, you pretty much make the same decision on, in the continental United States, you know, for 3 hours, 50 minutes, it's probably, you know, going to the East Coast from the West Coast, right? You know, across Trascon, you know, you probably, most people probably would make that same decision, you know, let's spend the extra miles and enjoy the premium class of service. And I would say in some ways that flight was superior to what you'd fly on American, you know, let's say flying Las Vegas to DCA, you know, for actually more miles, I think is what they usually charge for that trip.
Which reminds me, I need to really work my flights to Zorkfest.
As you can see, once again, you know, as we mentioned earlier, you know, we aren't always planning these things out super in advance. A lot of times we're procrastinating. I think we're not the only ones. I think you're learning a little bit that sometimes we leave things to the last minute on these types of trips.
Well, I don't think it's always intentional. I mean, I have a placeholder flight for Vegas, but then they change the schedule like 3 times and I just have to call and see how they can give me something better. But, you know, we talk about other trips that we're planning. I've been trying to plan a trip for June of next year, and I looked right at beginning of schedule, and I didn't see flights that worked, and I've been looking since, and I'm at the point now where I'm taking family members that don't normally travel the way I travel, and I'm getting them more and more comfortable with the fact that, hey, we're going to do this trip. Here's the rough range to clear your calendars for, and when I find it, I'm going to find it. And they're obviously and understandably uncomfortable with that. But the way that the space is now is there's just so much uncertainty and there's so much inconsistency. I mean, I used to be able to find Geneva all the time out of Dulles. And I can't even find Geneva in business class out. I don't know. Are there any other, before we close out, are there any other kind of regular routes that you go to as your go-bys? Like Dulles Zurich, that's always I'm not going to say always, it's not been very good lately, but that used to be a good one, given probably the fact that Swiss only started coming to Dulles, I don't know, like 2 years ago?
You know, I felt for a time, you know, it was pretty regular that you could find some space on some, either the Air France or KLM flights. You know, those seem to be pretty routine, at least from Dulles. But I think it's a lot more hit or miss now, definitely, than it was in the past. Similarly with, I think, Virgin Atlantic, you know, but I mean, who wants to fly Virgin upper class on an old 330, especially, you know, when they are charging, at least I think, significant amounts of fuel surcharges and taxes. So the white queue is usually what, and in fact, that was one of the things that kind of tripped us up because, you know, we were, I think, at one point considering a Delta One flight to Edinburgh. And then I don't think we realized until a little, when we went to actually go to book, like, uh-oh, this is all using Virgin miles, and I think the white queue was going to be like $1,000, and we're like, yeah, that's a bit rich for business class, especially a nice short flight from like JFK to Edinburgh.
Yeah, I keep on wanting to get back on Virgin, like to try their new product, and it's just harder and harder to justify. Although the interesting thing is, they fly to the Maldives now.
Oh yeah, they do have some interesting routes, but you know, yeah, I have a kind of a love-hate relationship with Virgin. I use their currency often. But, you know, a lot of times in the premium class, you know, it's just, it's kind of a challenge, just mainly to do with what they charge for their fuel surcharges and fees.
And that's probably a good conversation for another episode, sort of balancing the number of miles versus the dollars out of pocket and sort of, you know, what our methodology is, what our philosophy is, probably something to give more thought to.
That's a very personal, it's a very personal thing too, because, you know, I think the way you value your miles and your points are very different than how I do, and that's part of the clash sometimes, right? You know, as we do our joint planning together, is that we don't necessarily ascribe the same value to certain things as, you know, the other one does.
Well, and that's because we earn our miles differently too. I won't get into it on this episode, but you know, the reality is I probably generate or earn a lot more miles than you probably earn in any given year, just because of the strategies that I employ versus the strategies that you employ. And so, of course, you're going to be much more miles efficient. And I think that almost makes our trips more entertaining and also more fun. In this trip, for example, I booked us the Aeroplan flights for $100,000. And then I think you ended up booking the remaining 3 awards because it was just easier to do it that way. And so you used the miles you had access to. I used the miles I had access to. I happen to sit on a unfortunately sizable balance in Aeroplan because of a transfer bonus earlier in the year that was just too good to pass up. And I think Aeroplan miles are just so versatile. So versatile. I love them. I mean, I've probably burned millions with the family. But I think that really does make for an interesting dynamic when we travel, because I think it also opens up a lot more opportunities than we otherwise would have had. Because just like you come from a different perspective from the burning of miles, you also bring a different perspective on how you search.
Yes, I think we definitely do. And hopefully, you know, in some cases, we're able to take from both of our perspectives and kind of come up with something, which I think, you know, I'm pretty happy with the trip that we came up with. I felt like we did a pretty good job of maximizing value. Was a very short trip. And, you know, the amazing part was just how quickly it came together. I mean, I think what we were on the phone 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock on that Saturday, we were on a plane. You were in the airport the following morning, right? So.
And that's the beauty of it. I mean, we booked less than 24 hours. I think, did we book 24 hours out for our actual Chicago flight? Probably about 24 hours, but it was probably about 20 hours.
It might have been less than 24 hours that we booked that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we literally booked so close in, and it all worked out. We even found ourselves at the Capital One Landing Lounge at Reagan National for what, breakfast?
Yep, or that lunch? Was nice.
One of those.
Oh, yeah. We definitely had a share of premium lounges, but we'll save that for the next episode, I guess.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a kick that we were in the same lounge, like almost a week apart between MSP and our trip out.
Yeah, the Capital One Landing is definitely getting plenty of utilization from the two of us.
That they are. So, Tom, before we close out, I would just want to ask our listeners, hey, please put in the comments or message us directly or share in the Slack. Is this helpful? Is this getting a little bit closer to the mileage redemption strategies that you're sort of looking at? This is obviously much more of a travel banter sort of recounting a very chaotic approach to a last minute trip. But in future episodes, we are going to try to get a little bit more into how other mile and point folks plan their strategies, their trips, and redemptions. So again, really just asking for some feedback, because we love the feedback. It helps us figure out what topics we want to cover. Tom, anything you want to add to that?
No, just, you know, again, I hopefully you gleaned a little bit of knowledge. You know, I know a lot of times you listen to these things for the small nuggets that give you ideas or inspiration. And hopefully we're able to do that as we move forward on these podcasts, which we love doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A labor of love, definitely. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.